Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And we had a caller to ask D. Mace bring up a very interesting point, and it's something that I've heard Jared talk about this week. It's something that I've heard Chase and Michelle talk about this week, and it's about the Titans' potential pursuit of Hendon Hooker. And it's something that we talked about yesterday, that history would show that picking your future quarterback, your franchise quarterback, first overall in the draft, it is more likely than not that that's not going to be your guy. You know, if you looked at it, in the last 20 years, there are two quarterbacks taken first overall that have won Super Bowls, one being Matthew Stafford, one being, I have it written down in my notes, I don't know the other one off the top of my head. And none of those were with the quarterback, were with the team that drafted them. Joe Burrow, you know, probably will win a Super Bowl with the Bengals, hasn't yet. Trevor Lawrence, we'll see about him. But there are so few starting quarterbacks in the league now, really, that were taken first overall. Trevor Lawrence being one of them, Joe Burrow being one of them, Matthew Stafford being one of them. But if you look at some of the top quarterbacks in the league, Patrick Mahomes taken 10th overall, Aaron Rodgers taken at the bottom of the first round, Josh Allen taken in the top of the middle of the first round, and then you got Jalen Hurts taken in the second round. You had Dak Prescott taken in the fourth, Lamar Jackson taken at the bottom of the first round. So many starting quarterbacks that are some of the best quarterbacks in the league right now, they weren't taken first overall. So few quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls were the first overall quarterbacks. So we kind of kicked around the idea. Could the Titans' future quarterback be there sitting at 11? And Hendon Hooker could be one of those quarterbacks that could be available to you at 11. Now, are you going to use your first-round pick, your 11th overall pick, the best pick that the Titans have had in quite some time, on a quarterback that's not going to be able to help you until at least 2024, of course, coming off of the ACL tear? And I don't know the answer to that question.
Do we think that Hendon Hooker could rise that high? Is he a first-round pick?
No, he's not.
Yeah.
I don't think that he was a first-round pick pre-ACL tear. I think he could have been like a fringe first-round, second-round guy, and then you add the ACL on top of it. But also, the Titans don't need a quarterback this year. The Titans could afford to have Hendon Hooker sit on the bench. You start Ryan Tannehill. Hendon Hooker heals. He learns the system. He could be back in 2024. I'm just saying, if the Titans do believe in Hendon Hooker, if they look at Hendon Hooker and say, that is our quarterback of the future, why not spend a first-round pick on him?
Well, I wouldn't go first-round for him. But it is an interesting question with a guy like Hendon Hooker, who just turned 25 last month. So he is an example of, with the COVID and with the way college sports are going this year, I think a lot of kids try to delay. There's this thing called reclassification while you're still in high school. A lot of guys do that.
Get in early.
So you tend to be a little older in college. And I wonder how that works with NFL scouts. Like, much has been made of Lamar Jackson is still 25 years old.
Which is crazy.
And he is just a few months older than a lot of really high-end college quarterbacks, Stetson Bennett and Hooker, right? Mm-hmm. So how does that equate for scouts? Like in baseball, something that used to happen a lot way back when I was playing that they've got corrected to a point now is a lot of Latin players would feel like they were much more marketable if they fibbed on their age by a couple of years, right? Not by 5 years or 10, but if you told everybody that you were 20 as opposed to 22, then you're like, hey, this guy still got some upside. He's only 20. But in reality, he was 22. We've seen a couple quarterbacks in the NFL, Brandon Whedon, and a guy that I was in the minor league baseball system with, Chris Wenke, who won a Heisman Trophy for Florida State.
When he was like 50.
He was 20. He was 28. He was 28 years old.
So wild.
Same thing with Brandon Whedon. So Brandon Whedon was 28. And had a great year for Oklahoma State. Was a first-round pick for the Browns, but he was one of the long list of failed Browns quarterbacks. And so what is your upside when you have excelled at the level that Hendon Hooker has excelled at, but you're older? Mm-hmm. I just wonder how scouts try to equate that when they evaluate him. So to me, I don't see how he would go in the first round, but is a mid-round pick, like you were saying, Derek, if you got 5 good years out of him, that'd be still really good, even though he's starting at a later age.
Yeah, I think had he not gotten injured, I think he would have been a first-round talent, and somebody would have possibly taking him at the end of the first round. He's just, whether we believe it's the offense or whatnot, he still had to orchestrate the offense.
Totally.
I mean, he still was, you know, an efficient quarterback. He completed 70% of his passes, I believe. His touchdown to interception ratio was off the charts. So he always seemed to make the right decision. And that goes a long way. His football IQ seemed to be high. And these are all the things that we talk about when trying to project a quarterback arm strength, mm-hmm. quarterback QBI IQ, you know, athleticism, all this other stuff. And is he the most athletic quarterback out there? No, because there are a lot of times where he ran and it was like, man, his athleticism is good.
He's
it's not
mobile.
Great. Yeah, he's a mobile quarterback that can get outside the pocket, extend the play.
Like, I saw somebody compare him to Lamar Jackson.
No, he's not.
I was like,
not.
That is so
no.
off base. That's not
no,
the kind of quarterback
not,
that he is.
Have you seen Lamar Jackson play in college and in the pros? Hendon Hooker is nowhere near that when it comes to athleticism.
And Lamar Jackson isn't airing the ball out 65
exactly.
yards downfield.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a certain amount to be said about, you know, getting it done mm-hmm. at the level that Hendon Hooker got mm-hmm. it done at.
And let's exactly. not forget that this offense looked completely different when Joe Milton was the starter.
Yes.
Yeah. So
he lost to Pitt,
right.
and then Hendon Hooker's named the starter, and now they're the number one team
yeah.
in the country
so
at one point.
So regardless of the system and everything like that, you've got
to
give him some credit for mm-hmm. making it work. But it is interesting. Like, I just looked at the birthdays. Malik Willis is a full year younger than Hendon Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, how does that work for a scout? Like, I know how the baseball thinking goes. It's like, well, this guy's still developing. But this is, again, we're talking about a game where you develop people in the minors. You can give them time in the minors to let them work their way through, and then you decide if the guy can play or not. In football, you kind of have to make the decision, especially at quarterback. You're only playing one person. It's hard to develop, and you don't have a minor league team to put these guys on. So at 24, it's like you gotta get there, and you got to get there quick. We have all our questions now about Malik Willis,
mm-hmm.
and he's still a younger than Hendon Hooker.
You know, you're right, and I'm gonna, you know, go out on a limb and say this. I think he still will get drafted in the first round, Hendon Hooker. I think a team at the bottom of the draft in the first round, they may need a quarterback potentially, or, you know, they're looking further down the road. Like, okay, maybe in about 3 years or 2 years we're gonna need a quarterback. I think they're going to, you know, draft him because, minus the injury, he has everything that you want in a quarterback. He has it. He has the arm strength. He has the mobility. More importantly, he has the quarterback IQ. He's a winner. He's a leader. He has everything that you would want in a quarterback. The only knock right now is two things: his age and his injury.
Why do you think, even before the injury? Middle of the season mm-hmm. when Hendon Hooker's balling out, Tennessee's undefeated. Why do you think even then, before the injury, Hendon Hooker was still projected as late first round, probably a second round
pick? Because
of
the system.
You think?
Because, yeah, the system that they play in. But again, you said it. You put Joe Milton in that system.
Looks totally different.
It looks totally different. The system doesn't operate the way it does when Hendon Hooker is underneath center. When Hendon Hooker is underneath center, that offense ran, like, it just was like a machine.
Mm-hmm.
They knew exactly what to do. He knew what to do. He called out the plays. He read the defenses. He knew where to go with the ball. When Joe Milton got in there, it seemed like that whole offense took a step back. So, to me, I'm not worried about, okay, the system, because I've seen two guys in that system, and one flourished, and the other was like, it was okay. Yeah, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great either. And, you know, the other knock will be, well, he didn't underneath center. Well, how many quarterbacks get underneath center nowadays?
A lot less than it used to be.
Yeah. So are you going to knock, Bryce Young for that? Are you going to knock C.J. Stroud for that? No, you're going to still draft him.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't going to be he's never been under center. Hendon Hooker may not have been under center all the time, but I'm sure he's played underneath center before, and he can do it. And he's going to put in the work that it takes to take snaps from underneath center. The NFL is going, you know, they do a lot of plays where you're not underneath center. So that shouldn't even be the question anymore. Like, that shouldn't even be a critique of a guy that has everything else, but then, oh, he's never been under center. Have you watched NFL games? A lot of these guys are not underneath center either.
Well, I think the fact is, too, you better make it work if you're a pro scout of figuring out who can play under center. Because so many college quarterbacks grow up playing from the shotgun.
Exactly.
That's the way football is played now.
That could be the knock on every quarterback that comes out for the next 15 to 20 years.
And it could be, it's a fair knock.
Yeah.
But can you scout it to say, you know, that guy can develop into more of a pro-style offense?
Or do you just run as a pro-style offense a little more from the shotgun?
Maybe so. And, and it really is, it's interesting to see the trickle-up effect of the college game to the pro game. Because you really start to see these trends happen in college, and then it graduates to the pros. You start in college as a very, very pass heavy system, and then you kind of see it go up to the NFL level. But my point about Hendon Hooker, very fair point. Mm-hmm. He executes Josh Heupel's system much better than Joe Milton did. Mm-hmm. But is that because he's a better quarterback for the system? Or does that mean that he's just a better quarterback overall? I do think he's a better quarterback overall.
I just think he's a better quarterback overall.
Does he thrive in that system, which isn't a pro-style system?
If I'm ranking quarterbacks, take away the injury, take away the age and the injury. If I'm ranking these quarterbacks, then to me, he would be ahead of Will Levis. And as much as I like C.J. Stroud, he did shrink a few times.
Yes.
He did shrink a few times in some games.
Penn State, Northwestern.
Exactly. So
Michigan.
I'm putting Hendon Hooker closer to C.J. Stroud. Now, nobody's Bryce Young. I think Bryce Young hit the knock on Bryce. Oh, he's too small. You can't touch quarterbacks in this league no more. So if he's not 105 pounds, we're good, you know, and he's 5'11". Oh, well, so what?
Bryce Young is so good.
He's just a – is he a difference maker? Is he a game changer? Is he a leader? Is he a winner? Oh, he checks all of those boxes. Does he have the arm strength? He checks all of those boxes. I don't want to hear about he only weighs, you know, 210 pounds and is 5'11". You can't touch him anymore.
And that's why I come back to the age question. Bryce Young is 21.
Mm-hmm.
Hendon Hooker's 24. So how do scouts weigh that? So I don't know the answer. Like, some scouts may feel different than others on it. I just know in baseball, that would be a big thing.
And that's a really tough thing. If you do decide to draft Hendon Hooker, he'll be almost 30, if not 30, by the time that you need to decide what you want to do with his next contract.
With his second contract, yep.
And 30 is kind of the line of demarcation of, okay, what have you done so far in your career? And that's a tough decision to make, to decide to pay a quarterback $40 million.
But you just pay him as such.
If he's 30 years old.
If he's playing great. He's 30, then you sign him. You don't worry about it.
D-Mace, if you're the Titans at 11, do you take Hendon Hooker?
No, because he's injured. And they have pressing needs. They have needs that guys need to be on the field this year. If I can parlay it into two picks, like somehow get two first rounders, which won't happen, then he would be my later round pick. Or, hell, if he's sitting there in the second round and I got him ranked higher than the players that are on the board, then we need to talk as a ball club. Like Vrabel, Ran, everybody needs to talk and say, listen, we got an opportunity to get our quarterback. Should we take him, knowing that he's injured and he won't play until the next following year? Should we take him? I don't know.
Fair question to ask. It's a tough question that they're going to have to answer. And I see your questions, your calls, your texts on this. We'll get into those coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
I agree. I have a hard time counting him out. But because of the injury, and he's been hurt before. He was hurt at Virginia Tech as well. I think there's some risk there is what I would say. So I'm more sold on Hendon Hooker than I am on some of these other guys, to be honest. I mean, I think Bryce Young's really good. I told you my concerns on him are size. C.J. Stroud, I would like to see more film. I probably need to study him a little closer. What he did against Georgia in the bowl game really caught my attention, and what he did last year in the Rose Bowl caught my attention. But in the Big Ten, with a group of receivers that he's had over the course of his career, I'd like to think maybe you and I could put up some pretty significant numbers. But Hendon Hooker's an intrigue to me. You know, Anthony Richardson's a freak athlete. Coached against Anthony Richardson this year. He's big. He's strong. He's athletic.
I know, but your team wasn't very good, and you guys held him in check pretty well.
I agree. I think each of these guys has warts. I don't think there's a surefire guy. I think what Hendon Hooker did. Now, let's keep this in mind. When Hendon Hooker transferred to Tennessee, he was not the starter.
No.
You know, he came in, and he competed with Joe Milton, and he beat Joe Milton out, or perhaps Joe Milton lost the job in some way, shape, or form. But and what he's done over the last 2 years for Coach Heupel and the Vols has been off the charts. And he's a great story, and he's a unique athlete who can throw the deep ball. He's a pretty accurate thrower. He can make plays with his feet. He can make plays with his arm. And to me, I think the injury will prevent him, obviously, from participating in a lot of things he needs to participating in draft leading up to the draft. But by all accounts, when he went to the Senior Bowl, was impressive in meetings, impressive with how he handled himself. So I think although he won't be maybe that first-round guy, I think he's someone that I think all 32 teams have on their radar for, hey, let's take a chance on this guy in round two, round three. I don't think he's going to last through the second round or the first 100 picks in the draft.
There you go. That was Coach Bob Shoup on Stillman & Company earlier this week on Hendon Hooker. And I think the Titans, I've said this before, I think the Titans are going into the season with a really great opportunity at quarterback and also with a really scary path at quarterback, because the Titans have the privilege of having a starting quarterback under contract that's a pretty solid starting quarterback in the National Football League. With that being said, there's no clear path to the next guy if and when they do decide to move on from Ryan Tannehill. So if the Titans did want to, like Bob Shoup said, take a potential risk on Hendon Hooker, considering that he will be 26 years old whenever he's ready to play. He's 25 now. He'll most likely sit for this season given the ACL. And also, given the ACL that he is injured, it is inevitably a risk. And I think that the question surrounding Hendon Hooker, at least for me, was it Hendon Hooker? Or was it the system? Was it something kind of in the middle of those two? So inevitably, Hendon Hooker is going to be a risk. But the Titans can't afford to take that risk. Mm-hmm. Because if they do draft Hendon Hooker, I don't believe that they would draft him to be their starting quarterback in 2023. That wouldn't be very smart. There are a whole lot of teams that do need to draft their starting quarterback for 2023. The Titans have the luxury of being able to sit back and say, hey, we can look for our potential quarterback of the future, like what they did with Malik Willis. Mm-hmm. If he's our quarterback of the future and we found him in the third round, great. We'll look like geniuses. If he's not our quarterback of the future, which it's looking like he most likely is not going to be your quarterback of the future, then it was a third round pick. No harm, no foul.
Yeah, but I understand that point, but you don't want to. And I know Rand don't want to get into the business of drafting a guy in the third round. And then if he doesn't work out, say, oh, well, it was just a third round pick. No, those picks eventually add up. And these are guys in that first three or four rounds, these are guys that you are projecting will help your team in some form or fashion, whether it be starters, backups, special teams guys. That first three or four rounds, those are the guys that are ultimately going to build your team, and even in the fifth round at times. But, Coach Shoup, he was right. I mean, when you look at this list of quarterbacks, the only – the guy that I have no questions about is Bryce Young. That's the only guy I have no questions about. He's shown me. If you want to question his size, go ahead. But everything else he's shown me, I don't need. He's played big against big competition. He's come back off an injury. He's willed his team to win by himself. Guys were dropping passes. He still willed his team to win.
He single-handedly won that Texas game.
Absolutely. And he almost won the UT game by himself.
Yeah.
Damn near.
Almost won the LSU game
by
himself.
Exactly. So there's no question, at least for me, I have about Bryce Young. Now, they're going to try to knock him. That's just how, scouts are and what that's how the draft process is. They're going to praise you on one hand, and then they're going to knock you down on the other. But Hendon Hooker is the guy that, beside Bryce Young, that next two or three guys, they're all bunched up to me, whether it be C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, or Hendon Hooker. Those guys, to me, there's not much separating those four, other than age and probably injury. But to me, Hendon Hooker has shown everything that you want to see from a quarterback. in the SEC, the toughest division, and I hate to say it because I'm a Big Ten guy, but the toughest division in college football is the SEC. And he proved that he can stand tall, you know, next to any quarterback, and that's including Bryce Young. And he stood tall until he got injured. So if you're going to draft him, prior to the injury, I believed he was a first-round pick, a top 15 pick. After the injury, I still think he's a late first-rounder into the second round. If he gets past the second round, then, yeah, the Tennessee Titans need to think seriously about either moving up to get him, or if he lands right at your spot, they drafted him.
This is another thing that a talent evaluator has to weigh. You know, I brought up the age thing. Hooker's older. He's 24, and as Bob Shoup just pointed out, he wasn't the starter until there was an injury to open it up. He had already played for a long time at Virginia Tech. You know, he wasn't really on the radar for a long time, even though he was sort of a draft eligible. When he was the age that Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud are right now,
he was still
in the middle, kind of in the middle of this saga that he was in for a long time. He's in college for a long time, right? The other thing that I think is interesting for an evaluator, we watch SEC football backwards and forwards. We know who the star players were. But a talent evaluator has got to say, okay, dominant player in the SEC, let's take him and let's weigh that against somebody like Josh Allen who was playing at Wyoming, right? And we have to say, decide, okay, what does that mean? The level of competition he's facing each week and excelling at that competition. Well, what do the players around him have to do? That's a really tricky thing, right? That's an inexact science. I remember thinking about that a lot. Jay Cutler versus Vince Young versus Matt Leinart. Remember that unbelievable classic championship game? USC with Matt Leinart and all the great players on that team.
Vince Young for Texas.
Those guys were all coming out. And
it's
we
one of
all
the best
knew.
Games of all time.
And we all knew that the Titans were going to take a quarterback because they were moving on from Steve McNair, or at least they knew that that time was near. And Jay Cutler was also in the backyard playing for a poor Vanderbilt team, right, and trying to elevate them, almost getting them to a bowl game, beating a few teams that they shouldn't have beaten. You see the talent, but what he had around him was not nearly close. So weighing all that, Jay Cutler was probably the best of the three. You know, not that Jay Cutler lit the world on fire, but he played a lot longer than Vince Young, played way longer than Matt Leinart. But
yeah, none of those
Matt Leinart and Vince Young were Heisman Trophy kind of guys lighting the world on fire. It didn't mean they were going to be better pro quarterbacks. So how you do in the SEC means something for sure, but what does it mean? That's where the scouts really earn their money.
Well, that's a decision that the 49ers made. They went with an FCS Trey Lance over a national champion Alabama quarterback Mac Jones.
Yes.
So that is something tough that you have to weigh, because you might look lights out in the SEC. That doesn't always translate. Could mean that it does translate. We've seen plenty of SEC quarterbacks, and ACC even, Big Ten quarterbacks, excel in the NFL. We've seen a lot of no-name players excel in the NFL beyond the quarterback position. I don't even know where Aaron Rodgers went to school. Went to Cal, Berkeley?
Yeah.
To Cal, not a powerhouse program. I guess it was at the time more so than it is now. Trey Lance, another one, an FCS program. Jimmy Garoppolo went to Eastern Illinois, Western Illinois?
Eastern Illinois.
Some directional Illinois school. So it's not always indicative of that, and that's why we have talent evaluators.
Well, you got to project. It does have something to do with the conference that you play in, because you're going to play, like if you're playing in the SEC, you're going to play against stiff competition every week. But it's also, if you're not playing the SEC or you're not playing in the Big Ten, or you know, Pac-12 biggies, if you're playing in some other conference, it's what does the talent project to be like for a quarterback? If you're looking at a Trey Lance, he's played in a lower level, but what does his, did he dominate that lower level for one? And if he did, what does that translate into in the NFL? Like if he, you know, if you draft a guy and you're looking at him, he doesn't dominate the FBS, then you have some questions. Like, you know, yeah, he has a big arm. Yeah, it is. But he didn't even dominate you know, his conference, and it was a lower conference.
Imagine Floyd Reese evaluating Steve McNair at Alcorn State.
But he dominated.
He absolutely dominated. Yeah. But he also had to figure out, okay, how does this translate at the next level? They made the right choice, though.
Exactly.
And that's why it's so interesting to me why Will Levis, like even Mel Kiper thinks that he's going to be the first overall pick. Mm-hmm. Well, Will Levis wasn't anything special. Kentucky wasn't anything special in the SEC, so I think it's interesting. Sometimes you can come from a very unspecial program in a very special conference and still emerge as maybe one of the best quarterbacks in the bunch. I see a bunch of your phones lining up. We've got Preds thoughts. We've got draft thoughts. We've got Hendon Hooker thoughts. We are into all of that coming up next, 615-737-1025. Caroline Billy, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Unless you two have thoughts,
let's go to the phone.
To the phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff from Tennessee texts in and says, why would you want Ryan Tannehill to teach Hendon Hooker anything? That is absurd. Look how much Malik Willis learned on the Tannehill. Zero. Like Tannehill says, I'm not here to teach other people doing my job. Why would you want Hendon Hooker to learn from Ryan Tannehill? Because Ryan Tannehill has been a starting quarterback in this league for 10-plus years. That's why. I mean, you can say whatever you want about Ryan Tannehill. I've said it. I don't think that he's the quarterback that can get you to a Super Bowl. I don't think he's the kind of quarterback that can elevate the rest of your team. But Ryan Tannehill has so much experience. Ryan Tannehill is a certified starter in the National Football League. Let's not act like he has nothing to offer here.
Well, it wouldn't be. And I get that part. And everybody was in uproar when Ryan Tannehill said what he said.
Just had that flashback.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was mentor-gate. You know, I was sort of like, man, you can't say that. I mean, you have to be that mentor, whether you want to be or not in this league. You just, especially at the quarterback position, they bring in another quarterback in. But
I understood what he meant.
Yeah, I know what he meant.
It sounded bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And my point at the time was like a 20-minute press conference, and he said the one wrong thing, and everybody was talking about.
But it's not up to Ryan Tannehill to teach Hendon Hooker everything about the NFL. Yeah, he's going to give him, you know, little nuances and, you know, hey, you might want to throw it here, you know, instead of there. Just look, because when you come back to the sideline, those are the things you're talking about, especially in preseason. But it's up to Charles London to, if indeed they do draft Hendon Hooker, and I've been saying this for forever. Like, listen, I'm not putting any the development of the backup quarterbacks. I'm putting on the quarterback coach because you are there to make sure these guys have everything that they need, that they're learning the way that they need to learn, that when I put them in the game, they're ready to go or they're making progress and we are seeing it. That's why, you know, for the last year, I've been screaming like, listen, you fired these other two coaches. What's up with the quarterbacks coach? Because the quarterbacks y'all have drafted, y'all ain't developing them. Mm-hmm. And what we seen from Malik Willis, you damn sure ain't developing him. And you got rid of Woodside because you felt that Malik Willis was better. So that tells me you didn't develop Woodside the way you needed to develop him. So we need to get somebody in here that can help develop quarterbacks. So they went and got Charles London. Now he's the quarterbacks coach. So it's going to be up to Charles London to develop the quarterbacks. And from, you know, we've talked to TD and he said him, you know, down at the Senior Bowl, Charles London and Hendon Hooker, it seemed like they had a good relationship, you know, even though Hendon Hooker wasn't physically able to do anything, he still was in the meetings, he still was outside, and Charles London was still relaying things to him. Hey, this is what you need to do. Did you see that? He was teaching even though he couldn't play.
Right.
So it's going, if they, indeed they do draft Hendon Hooker or any quarterback, it's up to the quarterback's coach to be the one that makes sure that when he steps on the field, whether it be preseason or regular season, that he's ready to go.
And honestly, Tannehill was right when he said that. It's not my job to mentor him. I think it was more so it's not my job to sit him down and get up at a chalkboard and walk him through X's and O's.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
No, it's not. But it's just like the optics of it.
It doesn't sound right.
And it was one sentence, literally, that he said, not my job, Menorum, but blah, 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 blah. It was like part of a sentence.
It was taken out of context.
It really was.
And I understood what he meant. But what you can learn as a backup to the starting quarterback, it's all learning through osmosis, is what I think. Like, Hendon Hooker could sit behind Ryan Tannehill and observe and absorb. Mm-hmm. See what he's doing, kind of absorb what it takes to be a starting quarterback. Like, Ryan Tannehill's not going to, sit him down and walk him through the playbook. Mm-hmm. That's Charles London's job.
Exactly.
But you learn by observing.
An intern, right? When you have an intern, or if you're in an internship, or if you come in on a shadowing deal, that's kind of what you do, right? You try to absorb. That's what I tried to do when I was just getting around different things. Mm-hmm. Watch what people do who are good at what they do. And, absorb all that stuff like a sponge. You're right. So I think that's where that goes. But developing quarterbacks is such an enormous thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I think we all feel like it's not done very well in the NFL. Right, I don't think the league as a whole does a very good job of developing quarterbacks.
There's not enough good quarterbacks out there.
Yeah,
it seems the NFL to me seems very top heavy. There's a handful of elite quarterbacks, and then everybody else is in Kirk Cousins land or Trubisky land. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what it feels like. Cody texts in and says, I'd rather take the chance on the upside of Anthony Richardson versus going for Hendon Hooker. Hooker's ceiling is Tannehill. Anthony Richardson's is Josh Allen. I don't know what Hendon Hooker's ceiling is.
Me either.
I know that Anthony Richardson's floor is very low. I saw Anthony Richardson absolutely ball the freak out against Tennessee, threw for over 400 yards. I think he had 500-something yards of offense against Tennessee. And then I saw him play against South Florida and barely even be able to complete a pass. Anthony Richardson's floor is so low. The ceiling is high. Mm-hmm. That is true. He's incredibly talented. He's got a good arm. He's mobile. I can't take a risk on a quarterback that is so wishy-washy and so hot and cold. Florida went by Anthony Richardson. If you got good Anthony Richardson, Florida would look good. Mm-hmm. You got a bad Anthony Richardson, you'd almost lose to South Florida.
Yeah. Or Vanderbilt.
The floor is what he said. The ceiling.
Hedonic. Touché.
The ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the
victory. Commodores.
Yeah. I mean,
and they even got an extra play at the end of the game that they weren't supposed to get, and they still lost.
But, yeah, I mean, if I'm going with the proven product. And listen, Richardson, his ceiling may be high, and his ceiling may be Josh Allen. But that's not elite quarterback. I'm being honest. Josh Allen is not an elite quarterback. There's only two or three of those in the NFL right now. But, he could be Josh Allen, you're right, which is a really good quarterback in this league, or he could be Mitch Trubisky, which
or
is a
worse.
Bad quarterback in this league.
Or worse.
Yeah, or worse. So do you want to, as a GM, do you want that to be your first pick?
No.
I mean, it could be, you can knock it out the park, and he could be great. But Rand did say that can get you fired, too.
Real easily.
Yeah.
Gets you hired and fired in this league. One texter texts in about the Predators. So the Predators have given up. You can tell, but you cannot blame the team entirely. The coach and the coaches haven't given them a reason to play. General manager David Poyle haven't given them what they need.
Haven't given them a reason to play. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Well, the
given them a reason to play.
Here's your reason to play.
I really need to give you a reason to play?
I drafted you. Or I brought you in as a free agent.
Your reason to play
I gave you a
job.
Bunch of money to play a sport that you supposedly love, and only so many get to play this sport at this level. Damn it, that's your motivation. It shouldn't be any. That's your motivation. There's only how many spots are on a hockey team?
23.
There's only 23 spots on a hockey team, and you got one of them. That's
your
like there's only 50 some spots on the NFL team. Damn it. I shouldn't have to motivate you. You got one of them. That should be your motivation to stay here.
Yeah.
That's it. That's me. I mean.
The coaches can't give you reason to play. The coaches can motivate you to play. The coaches can try and get the best locker room environment
as they possibly
can.
There's no question.
And, the culture of the team, the identity of the team, that's the coach's job.
Nobody should feel comfortable about anything that happened last night. We spent the first half of the show breaking that down in detail. I will say this, as I've said many times before, I think there are some people that just they don't give John Hines any benefit of the doubt because he doesn't have a lot of skins on the wall, or and he's not Mr. Charisma, right? Somebody called earlier today and said he doesn't look like he has any emotion during the game. I assure you, he's not just coming in la-di-da every day. I don't really care if we win or lose, but you would, you know, that's what the impression is sometimes. But when he hasn't, he doesn't have a Stanley Cup ring or things like that. Like, you don't become a coach in this league if you don't care, right? But I understand when the team's not doing well and people are frustrated, sometimes it all goes on the shoulders of the coach. I think it should be compartmentalized. Everybody's got their share of what's going on right now. And he's got to take his share, right? John Hines does. But it's not all on him because he doesn't care.
He doesn't give them
a, quote, reason to play.
Do you want him to be what? Tom Cruise, what was the movie? When he got fired, like, y'all think I'm going to go crazy? Not going to go crazy. Just go grab my book. So y'all want him to go crazy? Yeah, y'all want him to yell and scream? And
Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire. Do y'all want him to throw stuff out on the ice?
Well, they did that last week.
Well, he might have been the catfish guy. I'm going to think John Hines was the catfish guy. He gave the signal, throw it, and he threw it.
Well, I want to know what happened there. During the game on a two-on-one. It was a two-on-one. It's not like the guy threw the catfish at, you know, Brad Marchand or somebody like that. Like, that would make more
sense.
But
they know who threw it, Willie. They got cameras everywhere.
He was on camera. He was on TV.
Maybe that's why we don't know who it is.
He had a gold shirt on. Like, we know who the guy was. What happened? I don't know. I haven't found out. I still would love to know. What the heck happened with the catfish?
Like, why? Why would you?
Like, you can't do that.
Well, Willie, you make a very fair point. And what the question that I want to get into coming after the break is, how much benefit of the doubt does John Hines get? And how much benefit of the doubt does John Hines deserve? We'll get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game.
Are you satisfied with the, they had the early goal? Did you guys have enough of a pushback in your mind?
I mean, they had the early goal, and then, I thought early in the first period our execution was not close to what it needed to be. I thought we turned pucks over at the offensive blue line. We didn't have ice to play on. I thought our power play was ineffective early. That gives you a chance to be able to have some pushback in the game, and, you know, that was the extent of the first period.
There you go. That was John Hines post-game last night. Just awful from the Preds last night. A 5-0 loss to the Boston Bruins. And Willie, you mentioned the fans don't always give John Hines the benefit of the doubt. And my question to you is, why do fans deserve to give John Hines the benefit of the doubt? You know, with Mike Vrabel after a losing season, everyone is looking at Mike Vrabel, not asking for his job, but because Mike Vrabel has shown that he is a good coach. He has proven that he has been able to get that team probably further than they deserve to be. You know, in 2021, the most injured team in the league, they get the top seed in the AFC. Mike Vrabel has deserved and earned that benefit of the doubt. What has John Hines done to earn the benefit of the doubt from fans?
Well, as I've said before, I think the last 2 years, if you're being fair, I thought they had overachieving teams. The two seasons leading up to this one. I don't think if you looked at preseason predictions that anybody had the Predators making the playoffs, and they made it both years. So I think he did a very good job with what he was handed. He was handed a mess. It was a broken team in the season where they fired Peter Laviolette. They started to make some pretty significant changes. You know, they moved on from Arvidsson and Ryan Ellis and Nick Bonino and Craig Smith, who had a great game last night. A lot of guys. They got younger. It was not the same team that it was when they got to the Stanley Cup final. And then the following couple years with P.K. Subban and in those years, they had to sort of start turning the roster over. I think he did a very good job of keeping them a playoff team those 2 years. But, of course, when you're not having success this year, the expectations were higher. They added veterans. They have underachieved this year. And so he's got to take some heat. But I do think he gets sometimes a little too much of the heat. It's too easy to say it's just him. I think it's him for sure for some. But it's also, you know, what are your top players doing? That's been my thing that I've been trying to say is if your top players aren't having good years, and it's hard for any coach to sort of make it happen. Is the coach responsible for how well your top players play? Probably a little bit, right? But it's not like he's not putting them out there. He's trying every. The system is the same as it was last year when many of these players we're talking about had great years. So what's different? It's not like he's changed a lot.
But isn't that why we look at John Hines in his last year and say he overachieved last year? Is because those top players did have career years.
Yeah.
Duchesne had a career year. Forsberg had a career year. Johansson had a solid year.
Yeah. And I think, like your point has been, he shouldn't get all the credit for that. And
you're
right.
You're not going to give him blame for it this
right.
year.
Right. But, no, so I think that's fair. Like, he deserves credit for building that identity that worked so well the last year and a half. Because it's really, they were struggling in the middle of March in 21.
Mm-hmm.
Then they really got
it
together. They
around,
found
yeah.
something. And from them all the way through to the time that UC Soros got hurt last year, it really looked pretty good for a while. So the players have to get some credit for that too. No question
yeah.
about it, for having the kind of year that he did. It's not all the coach one way or the other. So I think it's got to be spread around a little bit more than I see what's fair. But look, I'll quote Elliot Friedman again yesterday. Nobody should feel comfortable mm-hmm. when you're not playing up to expectations as a group. But Derek, you think? Let me just throw this at you. Mm-hmm. You would say that there are players there, you know, that are easy to coach. Mm-hmm. There are also some players where it's a constant fight to pull it out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You don't like those players.
It's hard, but sometimes those are the most talented players, mm-hmm. and you have to have those talented players play well for you to succeed. That's the tough part about being a coach. Sometimes, like, I don't need to worry about how Derek is playing. I know Derek is going to show up every day. He's going to be everything he's got. I don't have to be knocking on his locker stall and say, I need to come see you, Derek. I don't have to worry about that. But maybe I have too many guys like that who they're not going to sink or swim our team. I've got these other guys over here that I know they've got the talent to succeed, but I've got to make sure they're focused every day, and it's a constant fight to do that. Every team has got those guys, I think.
Well, eventually that's going to get you fired when you have guys like that you have to essentially go out of your way to try to figure out every day, one, is this player going to come in and practice? Is he going to practice the way I want him to practice, or to practice the way he needs to be practicing? And then two, is he going to play the way I want him to play and the way he needs to play in order for us to win? If my job hinges on that every day, then you might as well fire me now.
Well, let's give an extreme example from sports, right? And this is not – no. There's nobody like this guy I'm going to mention. But Phil Jackson mm-hmm. and Dennis Rodman,
yeah,
right? Dennis Rodman played for some teams where it worked really well. Mm-hmm. Chuck Daly got a lot out of Dennis Rodman.
Oh, yeah.
When he was with the Spurs, we can all remember Dennis Rodman taking his shoes off, sitting at the end of the bench, and just basically quitting on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was traded to the Bulls for Will Perdue, mm-hmm. right? And so with the Bulls, what did Phil Jackson do? He figured out how to get something out of Dennis Rodman and got a lot out of Dennis Rodman.
But you can
right?
do that
that's
when
an
you
extreme
have the,
guy.
Yeah, but you can do that when you have the greatest player
and
ever
yes.
to play basketball.
And not just the greatest player, but hardest working player.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Michael Jordan. He set yeah. the tone. He demanded that
mm-hmm.
from his team. So these are all the things that a coach has to tune into.
But Phil, Phil had won 3 before Rodman got there, so he had the skins on the wall.
It was a lot. It was a little easier to get him to
exactly.
fall in line.
Exactly. So it was easier to get him to fall.
And Dennis Rodman never
yeah.
fully falls in line anywhere.
No, he's going to be Rodman.
But they got mileage out of him.
Yeah, but when you have Pippen, when you have Jordan, who's setting the tempo and setting the culture every day, and guys are – you can have one guy that potentially does that walks to his own
yeah.
beat. You can have one guy. But in hockey, you can't have
– Right, and I'm not saying Dennis Rodman
yeah.
is in the locker room.
Exactly.
No. There's anything close to it. But I'm saying there's always a spectrum of guys,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the job of a coach, and it's not an easy job.
No, it's not.
But they're below standard. They're below expectation. They're in a tough spot. Let's see what they come out with tomorrow. It's desperation time.
It's not an easy job, but it is his job.
Yep.
That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back on Monday at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company is up next.
Peace.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the sunshine.